It was the summer of 1984. And was on an internship and had a little time off. Wendy and I went, this was in Alberta, Pinoca, Alberta, we went to Jasper to take in the sights and the breathtaking mountains and the beauty and grandeur of that part of the world. Any of you have been there, you know what I'm talking about. And for some reason, I wanted to go on that trail up the, take the gondola up and go on the trail, and I can't remember totally all of the details, but I went by myself. Wendy stayed down in the town, and I took the gondola up, and they had told me that to take the gondola and do the trek and come back would be about an hour and a half. Well, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to do it quick. I'll be back soon. Yes, right. So up I went, and I'm just marveling at all that is there, and then there was a path that one followed, and I saw the people trekking along, and I started out. Great gusto, you know, moving quickly, fast. It wasn't too long. In my own prideful self, I'm saying, boy, these people are moving too slowly. But it wasn't too long before I was completely out of gas. Not necessarily because of the physical shape, but because the air was so thin. And you have to move slowly when the air is thin. And it got so bad, I have to tell you, it was quite frightening. Because I started huffing and puffing and I couldn't catch my breath. I lay down and I'm telling you, it felt like I was going to die. I couldn't breathe. And people are passing by as I plop down there on the rock, asking, are you okay? Now, they're the ones who are walking slowly, so they're fine. And they couldn't even muster the breath to say, yes, I'm fine. I'm just, I wish they kind of came over and did something. I couldn't even talk. But you know, something else happened. As I lay there and I looked out over the peaks and I was kind of struggling and so forth and praying, says, God, not like this. You know, it'll take a while for Wendy to find me and I'm young. And I had a deep sense, a very profound sense of God's presence. And almost, when I look back on it, it was almost as if God was laughing like a knowing parent. You foolish boy. But more than that, a message came to me about pride that I carry even to this day. Whenever you're tempted to be prideful, remember this. Take action to be humble. That is my way. That's the impressions that came upon me. Now, I thought of that as I was reflecting on the text today when very descriptively Mark says that Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John up where? Anybody remember what was used, what adjective was used? To a high mountain. Where the air, I'm sure, was thin. I'm not sure that's what's responsible for their confusion. Up to a high mountain. And something happened. Something incredible happened there. Now, it is the kind of thing that happened that is easier to report than explain. But what I would like us to reflect on today is that it is symbolic of those places in the world, experiences and events in our lives that are revelatory, that disclose things that we would otherwise not pay attention to. In the Celtic tradition, about which some of you are familiar, those places are called thin places. Thin places. The poet Kathleen Raine writes, yet I have glimpsed the bright mountain behind the mountain, knowledge under the leaves, tasted the bitter berries red, drunk cold water and clear from an inexhaustible hidden fountain. Thin places. There's a Celtic saying that says that heaven and earth are only 3 feet apart. But in these thin places, that distance is even more narrow. The thin place refers to that veil, that stands between the reality we know and the heavenly glory, as it were, of God. That presence, that deep spiritual reality that sometimes we tap into, sometimes grasp us, surprise us, knock us on our backs, and presses against us with great, deep joy. Some people, they have that in their memory. They go to those places. It may be a favorite mountain site or a wooded area, somewhere that refreshes your soul, and you know that somehow when you go there, it seems as if the very woods or the very place is inhabited by joy, inhabited by the presence of God, and it refreshes you at every remembrance of it. These thin places are to be sought to refresh us. Another poet wrote, "Thin places, the Celts call this place, both seen and unseen, where the door between the world and the next is cracked open for a moment, and the light is not all on the other side. God-shaped space, holy." I think that Mark is trying to describe what happened in the experience of the disciples in that brief narrative. Jesus is transfigured, and the language that's used there in Greek, metamorphized. He goes through a transition, as it were, right in front of them, and his clothes are dazzling white, whiter than they had ever experienced or humanly possible to reproduce. That's why that phrase, "no fuller could do or die." It is a heavenly, it's a spiritual glistening. But what does that mean? Don't be concerned if you're not quite sure and confused, because the disciples whom Mark reports witnessed it are also confused. They're not only confused, but they are afraid. And Peter, you would note, speaks on behalf of them. He speaks out of his confusion. Well then, let's build three booths. Let's enshrine this moment. Let's stay here. Because Jesus and Elijah have come together, and Moses, to speak and confer. And that is a symbol, because within Judaism, law and prophets, these were the representatives. Moses for the law, Elijah, the prototypical prophet. The law and the prophets was used as a phrase to describe all of the religious and economic and identity narratives, as it were, that define the Jewish people. So here the totality of the heritage, if you will, of Judaism is represented. And it was held by those who were in charge, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and nobility. And here Mark is representing that these representatives are conferring with this rabbi whom the establishment has rejected, but there may be something here for us to pay attention to. Jesus' experience with the disciples is meant to do this. Just in the reference before, a few verses before, what Mark says, 6 days later, notice he gives a historical definition, 6 days later, just then Peter had confessed that this Jesus, after Jesus asked his disciples, "Who are people saying I am?" They get all kinds of answers. "But whom do you say I am?" And Peter chirps up, "You are the Messiah. You are the living Christ." Well, he gets the answer right, but he doesn't quite understand what that means, as we see in what he says about enshrining that experience. And so what I believe is going on here is that God has occasioned this particular event to bring to the fore, to bring to the experience of the disciples, the true nature of Jesus, and to understand what that means to them that they see in this person every day. This is the same person they've seen in the boat as they are out on the water fishing, who's picking chives out of his teeth after a meal, who has laughed and shared in joy with them, who is healed and blessed. This is the same ordinary Jesus. And that resident divinity, that resident reality from God is there all the time, but the way in which it is expressed is the way God has chosen to be in the world in enfleshed presence. Humility, taking suffering into himself. Not might is right, not strong and violent, but that is the way in which this Jesus is going to make a difference and transform the world. In humble, suffering, accompanying, blessing ways, persuasive ways. And so what they are privileged to experience is a disclosure of this reality, this God who is there, but they have not recognized it because it seems so simple, so ordinary. And so it's a moment for us, and it comes down to a crucial point where Peter wants to enshrine that experience. The voice comes and ignores that suggestion. Notice it's not even taken up. It's not even addressed. It's ignored. A cloud comes, and out of that cloud we are hearing reminiscent. Whenever you hear mountain and cloud, those are metaphors, symbols, as it were, for epiphany, for theophany. In other words, experiencing of God. So something is going to happen. Pay attention. This is my son, the beloved one. And what does the voice say last? Listen to him. Ukuete in Greek, which is from the same root as hupakoe, which means to hearken. So it's not just listen to the words. Oh, aren't those nice words? We like to hear nice words about Jesus or that Jesus spoke. And you can quote them. Whoop-dee-doo. The sense of hearken is to hear those words in such a way that you are moved by your will and your life to act upon them. So as we were saying with the children, blessed are the peacemakers. Nice phrase. Great little cross stitch on your fridge. But how are you engaging in your life the act of peacemaking? Listen to him. That's the key. Frederick Buechner, in his book, Theological ABCs, Whistling in the Dark, this is how he describes this particular event, this transfiguration, how he talks about it. In the transfiguration, it was the holiness of Jesus shining through his humanness, his face so afire with it that they were almost blinded. Even with us, something like that happens once in a while. The face of a man walking his child in the park, a woman picking peas in the garden, of sometimes even the unlikeliest person listening to a concert, say, or standing barefoot in the sand watching the waves roll in. Every once and so often, something so touching, so incandescent, so alive transfigures the human face, and it's almost beyond bearing. What he's trying to describe is the discipline of being able to see and pay attention to those moments when the thin places present themselves and we have, for a brief time, a disclosure of this God and this Christ whose mission and work it is to redeem the world. We need those to keep us going. If we had them all the time, they might seem mundane. If we never had them, we would wonder and worry. But we have to position ourselves, posture ourselves in such a way with a receptive and open heart, with eyes, not only eyes, but with vision, in order to experience that blessing of God. And when that happens, it is not meant for our own nourishment alone, but to move us then into the implications of how we must listen. It's very interesting, you notice that the pyrotechnics that Mark described, dazzling light coming from the clothes. You would expect something. Now pay attention. Did you see that? Did you see what God can do? Make your clothes shine? Ignores that completely because it's not about looking. It is about listening and doing. They're hard out and trying to get the people, but those who have come have not come to listen. They have come to look, to see what they can see. And so it's not a good experience. Similarly, we may be all caught up in, well, you know what? Did this really happen? Is this literal? Do we take this transfiguration and so forth? And all caught up in what we're trying to look and see and miss the word from the cloud. Listen to him. This is the same Jesus who says, blessed are the peacemakers. The same Jesus who says, love your enemies. The same Jesus who invites us, commands us, cajoles us, whatever it takes, and says, follow me. The same Jesus that says, set at liberty those who are captive. Bring food to the hungry, clothes to the naked. The same Jesus who says, come. And I will make you fishers of people. The same Jesus that says, come unto me, all you who are heavy laden. Whatever your burden is, what your pain, what your struggle is, come to me and I will give you rest. Learn from me. Listen. This is the same Jesus says, go. Go into the world and proclaim the message. It's the same Jesus. Pay attention to the listening. One of the ways I think that this intersects with our observance of Black History Month, you would remember that the season of Epiphany began with the story of the three wise ones who came from the East. You remember way back in January we started with that reading? And the wise ones came, we don't know exactly where, Persia, somewhere, astrologers, involved in activity that was strictly forbidden by Judaism, foretelling the future, all that sort of stuff, outsiders, not of the same religion, not of the same people. They find themselves there, bowing down, offering gifts, and worshiping the Christ, when the establishment, the church folk, the righteous ones, couldn't even see what God was doing. And here we are with another disclosure, another invitation to see. See how peoples of various cultures and backgrounds, who they are, what they have to offer, and how we ought to live in relationship with them. How we ought to take up the cause of one another. Doretta and Nathan are going to come now and to share a poem and song called The Grandmotherland that talks about Africa and the concerns and the pain and the struggle. One of the ways in which we listen to Jesus is to engage the woundedness of the world.
Of the 33.2 million people living with HIV worldwide, 22.5 million, 68%, live in sub-Saharan Africa. Worldwide, there were an estimated 2.1 million children living with HIV in 2007. Some 13 million children have been orphaned by HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa. It is estimated that by 2010, as many as 20 million children will have been orphaned by AIDS worldwide. Grandparents, particularly grandmothers, have taken up the challenge to make a difference in their communities and in their families. Grandparents, particularly grandmothers, care for around 40% of all orphans in the United Republic of Tanzania, 45% in Uganda, more than 50% in Kenya, and around 60% in Namibia and Zimbabwe.
13 million fall asleep in your arms. 22.5 million more may join the stars. Oh, Mother Africa, how truly beautiful you are.
Africa is known by its many admirers as the original motherland. And the motherland sits on her throne like a falling star, with blue sapphire rivers and diamonds in her eyes. Her long hair flows into rivers and streams, and her face is the vision that we see in our dreams. And when she cries, her tears pour out tropical storms that nourish exotic fruit trees and life, life like no other place on this earth. Oh, motherland, respect is due. Ancient civilizations basked in the radiance of your sun and spent all of your glory. And for what? What do we call the motherland when the mothers are all gone? And the fathers who once held your children with pride and stood steadfast, devoted by your side. They gave hope to the motherland and thrived in your grace. What do we do when the fathers can no longer show their face? When the mothers and fathers die, they leave a family behind, and there is often no one left to comfort the children when they cry. The motherland has become the grandmotherland, and she stands tall with her eyes shining with pride. She already raised the next generation, but she continues to survive. And she doesn't question, she doesn't complain. She stretches out her arms to comfort over 13 million orphans who will never know their mother, their father, their aunt, or their uncles. once said to her own children when they were alive. Oh, Grandmother Land, respect is due. Your sweet lullaby crossed the oceans and resonated in our hearts. Oh, Grandmother Land, with your soft silver hair that weaves across the land of both beauty and turmoil, as you watch 22 million more of your sister's children slowly suffer with the same plague that took your own child, you offer us hope. We would be honored to sit in your sunlight, even for a moment, and feel your warm sun and watch you accomplish the impossible.
Grandmother Africa, how truly beautiful you are. Oh, Grandmother Africa, how truly beautiful you are. Thank you.
May the thin places of our experience and faith journey usher us to the place where we can listen to this Jesus, loved one, and spend our lives and our resources and our faith and our prayers in the mending and blessing on our planet. Amen.